Welcome to Season 13 of Digital Learning Radio. I'm Catherine, and I am delighted to be joined by my co-host, Laura.
Hello.
This season of the podcast, we're continuing conversations of sharing what is inspiring us on our ongoing story of learning. This week, it's Laura's turn to share, and I'm excited to hear about what has been inspiring her.
It's my first share of the season, and I am ready. First, though, let's circle back to last week and do a quick check-in with you. You talked to us about the power of play and a few fun next steps. So how's it going? Did you have a playful and non-agendaed spring break? And P.S., I heard a rumor and I need to know the story of you recently meeting one of the authors, Jed Derryberry.
Yes, I found many opportunities to play during spring break. I'm continuing to develop my playful mindset. And yes, I did recently meet one of the authors of the Playful Life book.
How fun.
Yes. So I'll start with my author sighting story. At the end of February, I was invited to present at a conference in Belton ISD. And right after I purchased the Playful Life book, I discovered that the author, Jed Derryberry, was one of the presenters at that event too.
That's so cool.
It was amazing. So I messaged him on Twitter to connect and then was able to chat with him only for a few minutes at lunch. But I brought my book and he signed the book with Play Purdy, that's P-U-R-D-Y, which is another Southernism. So that was delightful. And it's so fun to make real life connections with people whose work you admire and you've been inspired by.
Yeah, that's so fun. And I love that you took the step to send him a message on Twitter. So very cool and fun connection.
Yes, yes. So one of my now whats from the past week was to work on reviving my playful mindset. Mm-hmm. And part of that just means noticing the play elements around me. I now realize that I am surrounded by fun people and playful opportunities, and being more lighthearted and open to possibility truly helps relieve some of my stress, or it has at least helped soften some of the feelings of sadness and overwhelm. Mm-hmm. So last week for me, play was baking and reading and puzzling and crafting and consuming funny books and TV and spending time with friends. But the highlight of the week was when my favorite cousin got me on his tandem bike.
Amazing.
It was incredible and super playful and scary, but that was true fun there. polka music and polka dancing might have occurred during the break.
Okay. Okay. You are leaning into playful and fun. I love it. I love it.
Yes. And I never would have taken these risks if I hadn't been thinking about play and fun and a playful mindset. I also realized that the playful mindset is not automatic for me yet, and I still need to intentionally plan for play. So one of the ideas from the Playful Life book was to look for an area of life that needed a boost. And I missed an opportunity last week during a Costco run with my mom. That is a giant headache for me. And so I really should have thought about adding more playful elements to that errand. Mm-hmm. So I know I need to keep working on this mindset, but that would have been a perfect opportunity for more play.
Next time you and your mom just race shopping carts, yes. Make it happen.
I was also thinking about doing some little number games, like, okay, we're going to pick up the 10th item, or make up stories about what people are cooking for dinner based on the items in their cart, those kinds of things. Anyway, finally, professionally, our friend Erica also loves the ideas about play, and she bought the Playful Life book too. So we're now working on a PD session about wellness, productivity, and the importance of play. So stay tuned for that.
Wow, that sounds so fun. And man, you have set a high bar for achieving those now whats. So I got to make sure I step up my game to be on a similar playing field here because, yeah, it sounds like you're nailing it. And that is so fun. So love all those updates. And I might have to get some additional details off podcast about some of those things.
Yes, off podcast is right. But at least I had spring break to really get this mindset started and activated. And now I hope this will just be a continuation for me.
Well, I love it. And it sounds like you have kicked this off just beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
So before I share my inspiration of the week, I would love to hear from you too. So Catherine, talk to us about a quick win that's inspiring you this week.
This week, I'm sharing an interactive map building tool called Proxy. I heard about it a few months ago from one of my favorite newsletters, Wonder Tools, but then our friend Lydia invited a group to contribute to a proxy map of Area 10 tech leaders, and I thought it was so easy and useful, so I wanted to share. Now, Laura, I don't know if you've ever tried using Google My Maps.
Oh, yeah.
That is super clunky. This tool is more user friendly, and you don't need to have an account to add to a map, but you create an entry and add your email address so you can go back and edit your response. So Lydia's Tech Leaders map allows people from all over Area 10 to add their contact information, their school or district, their tags by the role, and a photo. And so then you can see a map with locations and pins, and you can choose a pin or scroll to see digital contact cards.
Huh.
We're both involved with several cohort type groups. So I thought it would be useful for creating something similar in our communities. And for classrooms, the first thing I thought of was when I was teaching emergent multilingual classes, also known as ESL, I used a physical map where students identified their home countries. And I know Padlet also has a mapping feature, but Proxy seems so easy.
Interesting.
And then there are also templates and ideas on the Proxy website, such as conference or event planning or city guides. And the women founders were trying to solve the problem of trick-or-treat maps.
Ah, I love that.
And I know over the years, I've shared quite a few mapping activities with educators, like character journeys or locations of historical events and so on. But I couldn't find anything in Proxy about the terms of service for age limitations. And the first time I tried to add to a map, it was blocked in a district. So check all those terms of service and fine print before asking students to get involved. But for networking and connecting with others, I think this map is a great idea.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. I will certainly have to check that out. I don't think I was aware of this. And so, yeah, I've got a couple of ideas and also maybe find out where to go trick-or-treating. So win-win.
Either one, right. Okay, Laura, let's hear about your inspiration this week. As a reminder, we're using a reflective protocol to guide our conversation, so I'll be asking you to consider the what, so what, and now what of your share.
I'm ready.
Okay, so let's start with the what. Laura, what is inspiring you to learn this week?
Well, I love that you started our season with the power of play, because this week I'm sharing some of the work of Suzanne Daly from Teach Happier.
Ooh, I'm already intrigued, and what a nice connection. So let's pull up a timer, and in 60 seconds or less, Laura, give us the gist. Tell us about teaching happier.
Okay, timer activated. So Suzanne Daly has a website and a podcast. She's also a frequent guest blogger for Teach Better, and her work centers on the timely topic of how to teach happier with the tagline, small shifts, big gifts. She recently published a book, which is where I want to focus our conversation today, called Teach Happier This School Year, 40 Weeks of Inspiration and Reflection. And she calls this book, part professional development resource, part personal journal. Mm-hmm. And what I really like about it is that it's written to align with the 40 or so weeks of the school year and its seasonal ups and downs. And so each of the weekly chapters has a reflection activity and goal setting section that follows a brief inspirational story or think piece using research from positive psychology. So going through this book allows you to apply the idea that small shifts in thinking or action really can bring big gifts over time and over the course of the school year. Ooh. Also, that was so close for the timer. So
I was just
close.
Thinking almost 60 seconds.
almost.
Okay. There are so many great things in your little recap, though, but I am really intrigued by part professional development and then part personal journal. So
yeah,
I'm so excited to hear more about this. So let's dive a little deeper and tell us more to answer the so what about Teach Happier that's inspiring you to learn.
Well, I am always inspired by authentic self-work and mental health support, as well as things designed explicitly for educators by educators. So this really mm-hmm. is a perfect fit. Suzanne is an instructional coach in Pennsylvania and created the Teach Happier Work really as a result of the pandemic and the difficulties she and her colleagues faced during that time. Mm-hmm. She said she saw quite a bit of self-help resources out there, but really none that were created specifically for teachers and the unique calendars and corresponding kind of collective highs and lows of the work that we do. So she talks a lot about making these 2-degree shifts in our thoughts, language, or action to make life more manageable during challenging seasons. And then how over time, making small shifts each day can result in intangible and even huge differences. So again, her tagline is small shifts, big gifts, and it's bringing me some inspiration. And I want to talk a little bit more about kind of the concept of the work and then get into some of the specifics and details of the book itself.
First of all, the idea of someone who actually knows the calendar year for teachers
yes.
is something that I truly appreciate, and understanding like this time of year is awful. This mm-hmm. time is good. Mm-hmm. So I have to shout that out. And then also her idea of 2-degree shifts, that reminds me first, Catrice Cote's work of 1-degree shift. Mm-hmm. And then also James Clear, his Atomic Habits with 1% better. So I love this idea that these tiny tweaks to your work can make these huge gains. So yeah, small shifts, big gifts. Perfect tagline.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit more.
Absolutely. First of all, I have to say that this kind of daily reflection of like doing a reading and then doing a small journal entry or goal setting piece is absolutely not my style. So might I remind you, thinking back to last season of the podcast, that out of the 4 tendencies from Gretchen Rubin, I fall into the category of rebel. So doing a weekly scheduled reflection and following someone else's calendar and design is usually not exciting or motivating to me. And even sometimes eye roll inducing. Mm. However, Suzanne's work is somehow different. It is not hokey, and I think it speaks so clearly to the educator's experience. And again, that timeline and just kind of typical emotions mm-hmm. that follow the year, from the excitement of August to the exhaustion of October and February, Suzanne gets it. Mm. And I also want to say that each of the 40 chapters, there's one per week, is brief, like a page and a half, 2 pages max. So it's certainly time aware, and it's crafted with this just real timeliness of the authenticity of someone who is currently in education and just striving to coach for these small shifts to empower others to take charge and mitigate some of the particularly overwhelming and wild aspects of being an educator right now. On a personal note, I think this work is speaking to me and inspiring me, as I have intentionally focused and set some goals around the idea of finding contentment in my work. of prioritizing mental health and of practicing reflection and reframing some of my own thinking, and also achieving this work-life satisfaction, which, side note, this is something from the book, actually, to move away from the idea or phrase of work-life balance, which Suzanne reminds us is not actually achievable to evenly balance your work and your life, but instead reframe that thinking to setting boundaries and monitoring where your energy is going to try to achieve a satisfaction in both work and life. So all of that to say, I think I became aware of this at just the right time for me. So it really sparked an inspiration.
Well, Laura, in last week's episode, you mentioned this idea of multidimensional career growth with contentment being your priority. You're mentioning it again. So I can see that this is just right for you at this right time. So I love that you found this book when you really needed it and you're inspired by that. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about how the book is set up.
Sure. So first, I love the kind of bookend structure that the book has. So it provides the same series of questions to allow you to check in with yourself, really do some thoughtful thinking around the idea of happiness, both at the beginning, presumably before the year kicks off, and at the end of the school year. So I want to take some time to walk you through these opening reflection questions because they really serve to set the tone for this book and the subsequent weeks. Additionally, I really found them to be a productive and insightful series of questions to consider, so maybe you will too. It opens with a few pages of these reflection boxes, and the first you see is a quadrant, so there's space for you to add your thoughts. And so you're invited to think back to the previous school year and consider what worked and what didn't work. And there's a box for you to answer professionally as well as personally. Then you're asked to consider what was life-giving and what was life-draining, as well as something positive to remember or acknowledge and something negative to remember and acknowledge. And again, there's spaces provided to respond both professionally and personally. The next series of questions invites you to fast forward and think about the last day of school to answer how you want to feel at the end of the school year, how you want your students to feel, how you want your colleagues to feel, and how you want your family to feel. There's a section to name relationships that you've nurtured the past year and relationships that you want to nurture in the upcoming year. And then finally, you're asked to place yourself on a happiness continuum to consider where your baseline of happiness is. So there's a number line with some emoting faces, kind of like the ones that you see at the ER to rate like how high your pain level is. And there's a few descriptors for you to select your happiness baseline, kind of where you generally hang out, and then name some reasons why you feel the way that you feel. And so this kind of baseline of happiness is referred to throughout the book. And I think it's an interesting way to think as you're striving to make shifts to be happier. So thinking about that baseline, you aren't maybe always trying to be at a 10, like the happiest person on earth, but just kind of making those small shifts to be a little bit happier. And then the very last question you're asked is to begin with the year in mind to answer, what's the story you want to tell this year?
Oh, Laura, can we pause so I can go get this book right now?
For real, for real.
I am so intrigued by these questions, and it sounds like such a perfect activity to kick off the school year. And I love how she has considered your baseline and thinking about you and your students and your colleagues and your family members. It just seems like it encompasses all of this information. What a fantastic instrument to guide these reflections. Okay, if we're not pausing for me to go get the book, keep going and tell a little bit more.
I'll tell you some more. You can be purchasing it in another tab if you want to. Okay, so I got this book actually in late January. So my trajectory is definitely off and not aligned with the school year as intended. However, I found it surprisingly impactful to kind of kick off the new year of 2023 by going through this initial reflection exercise. And so I think I typically associate reflection with kind of an after the fact thing where I'm analyzing and thinking about what happened and maybe a way to remember what worked and what didn't. But I really like the idea of going through this before the school year even begins to reflect on the past and really set some intentions for the new year. And again, these very same questions appear at the end of the book so you can reflect on your goals and celebrate growth. And there are a few impactful tweaks, you know, I skipped ahead. And so, for example, the section to consider how do you want to feel at the end of the school year has an additional column at the end that asks, how do you feel? How do your students feel? There's also a new column to add to the story you wanted to tell this year. So it's what story did you tell this year and your related thinking. And again, I love this because I think just this alone could be a really interesting and impactful reflection process, like you said, to begin and end the year.
Well, and I love that you have found this impactful even in January. Just start of each semester or end of each semester. Yeah. Okay, that sounds amazing. And I love those comparisons of how do you feel? How did you feel? Those kinds of things. Okay, so what about what happens in between? So what do those each individual chapters look like?
Sure. So skipping to the end, every week has a page that reads small shifts, big gifts with three boxes to respond. The first box and its question kind of varies based on the content of that week's reading or challenge, but the second two boxes are always the same. First, set a personal or professional goal for the week based on one small shift. And then second, a weekly win. At the end of the week, jot down one great thing that happened. They're so simple, and I love that they're repeated throughout the year and throughout the 40 weeks, and just good questions to really kind of take charge of those shifts. Backing up, though, the content for each week is, again, very time conscious and only like 1 to 2 pages in length, which I love. And again, educator aware, we don't have a lot of extra time going on. So each week, the topic varies, but loosely follows kind of the energy and ups and downs of the school year. So you'll find an anecdote or an inspiration from Suzanne or a study or a statistic to consider, drawing from positive psychology or even a couple of tangible stories related to the topic. And then again, those three boxes to reflect. So here's a few of the weekly topic examples. There's a week focused on how to do less better, plan happier, just say no, rest happier, choose your hard, rational optimism, etc.
We have talked multiple times about the importance of celebrating. So I really like that question or that box about the weekly win. And I don't think we do that often enough, like go through and think about that weekly win. And all of those topics sound amazing. Do you have a favorite one so far?
So again, I started in January, and confession, I'm not an obliger, and I haven't followed the weekly schedule with regularity.
I would have.
I know, that's why I said it. But I'm really enjoying many of the weeks and the corresponding reflections I'm just casually going through. A favorite so far is this idea to wake up for bedtime. So for this week, Suzanne talks about being inspired by a frequent inspiration of our own, Brené Brown, and she references an episode of the Unlocking Us podcast featuring Dr. Edith Egger, who shared that she lives by the mantra, I choose in the morning how I'm going to feel at night. So Suzanne shares an anecdote about how she approached her own day differently after striving to feel accomplished, proud, and fulfilled when she crawled into bed that night. And for whatever reason, this really stuck with me. And I really liked this as a way to approach a day. And again, have this idea to plan first instead of solely looking back to reflect on what happened.
I love this so much. And I'm already asking, will you be my accountability partner here? Let's talk about how do we want to feel at night. So choosing that feeling and attitude. Whew, that's great.
So I shared a topic that's a favorite. I also have another reflection section that I really like set up throughout the book as report cards to monitor your progress every 10 weeks. So you have a built-in accountability system right there through report cards.
Okay, so this is a true educator that is writing this book. Keep going.
So there are four report card sections of the book, and you're invited to review and summarize what was meaningful to you over the past 10 weeks in this small chart that lists the topic of each of the previous weeks with a space for you to jot down your thinking and just kind of check in with yourself to evaluate how things are going as you revisit some of the goals or ideas from those previous weeks. There's also a few reflection questions with boxes for you to record your answer. One is to scan for the good, to record something that makes you especially proud or happy. I also liked being asked to name one or two small shifts that you've incorporated that have made a positive impact for you. And going further, can you articulate the impact of these small shifts in your life? Such a small but like powerful question. The next question you're asked on your report card is to name one or two shifts that you didn't have the bandwidth for, but you want to practice soon. And I love that language and the power of yet that this prompt embodies. So it's not, what did I fail to do? But like, what did you not have the bandwidth to do? The final report card question brings you back to some of those initial questions from the beginning of the book, asks how you're feeling related to your original happiness baseline that you set and kind of where you're falling on this happiness continuum at that moment, and to kind of reflect on a few reasons why. You get a report card section every 10 weeks, and I love the repetitive, predictable structure and really that forced opportunity to consider what's working, what isn't, and really checking in with how you're doing. It makes me think of a quote from, you guessed it, compassionate coaching that says, if we are committed to everything with every minute of our days allocated to others, when do we have time to actually internalize our experiences? We certainly don't. However, creating intentional space to reflect is essential if teachers are ever to go from simply checking tasks off of a list to experiencing deep personal and professional growth. This quote speaks to me, haunts me, and calls me out. And so I think this book and these report cards specifically serve to do just that. Force us to stop and really think about how we're doing and consider some of those contributing factors and some possible next steps in some small shifts to take from here.
Laura, this is so powerful and so wonderful. And we have talked so many times about the importance of reflection and introspection. And this seems like this puts all of these ideas in one place with these powerful prompts. And I love this idea of the report cards and like you said, these predictable questions and giving you that time and space to spend reflecting. So I am thrilled that you brought this book to our attention today.
Yeah, me too. It really takes a lot of these kind of just big ideas that we like to talk about and really just puts it in a tangible book that you can go through on a weekly basis. So I love that.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so what else would you like to share that you haven't yet?
Okay, I've got two additional shares. So first, Suzanne also has a Teach Happier podcast.
Ooh, yay.
It is 5 to 7 minutes in length. Again, very time conscious. And she kicks off each episode with the goal of getting into the healthiest headspace and heart space for our upcoming week working in schools. So they release on Sundays, and I've listened to a handful of the episodes, and a lot of the content aligns with reflective journaling prompts or anecdotes from the book, which I really enjoyed getting to both read about and then hear echoed from Suzanne herself on the podcast. And she just has this bright, joyful voice that really does have a calming effect. And I think it perfectly aligns with her goal of helping people get into a healthy head and heart space to gear up for the week ahead. And so I think listening to Suzanne on Sundays, if ever you are feeling those Sunday scaries, that struggle, really would be beneficial. And again, only 5 minutes of your day.
I will subscribe right now.
Yeah. And then my second thing that I wanted to share before we kind of wrap is I wanted to give a shout out to the impetus of my connection to this work. ASCD hosted a webinar with Suzanne to talk about her work in late January that I kind of just stumbled upon, and I've continued to think about it. So Suzanne embodied this just centered, cheery, calming presence, also amidst some like kind of weird tech setup struggles. Like they're having some connectivity issues and there are like hundreds of people on this webinar. And she just projected this confident calmness even over a webinar where she couldn't even see us. And it just reminded me of just how important that is and the effect that our presence really does have on others. Our students, our session participants, colleagues in the office, our people at home really are impacted by how we're showing up and the energy that we bring to a room. And so having an intentionally calm, centered, welcoming vibe is actually something that is a priority for me, but it was really delightful to be a participant and witness how it truly can serve to shift the energy in the room, even a Zoom room. And that 1 hour webinar flew by for me, and it really was a delightful experience. Plus, it got me to explore more and buy the book. So there you go. It was effective. And I think that webinar recording is actually posted on the ASCD website. So I'll be sure to link it along with the podcast and her book information in our show notes for the episode today.
Laura, you always do exude this calm and positive presence in your work. So I think you have that part down, but it is very reassuring to feel that as a participant and a reminder to keep that, or that's how important that is.
Oh, thanks.
This is amazing. I have loved your summaries and your descriptions of all of these reflections, and I am so inspired to learn more and go get the book and listen to the podcast. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Of course.
Well, as you know, another idea we're practicing this season is to use each episode as a place to launch further thinking. We want to challenge each other to apply what we share as we consider now what. So now what? Laura, what are some next steps from here to incorporate ideas from Teach Happier into your work or further your learning?
All right, I've got a list. It's three parts.
Okay.
First, continue working my way through the book and its journal prompts, but with more regularity and routine. I'm planning to keep the book itself in view by leaving it out on my desk. I usually keep a pretty bare and clean desk. Thanks, minimalist teacher book. back to an episode I talked about in season 10. But I think leaving it out and just kind of in my eyeline will help ensure that I think about it and add it to my weekly reflective practice. And then secondly, put it into practice. Reflection and reframing thinking have been important components of my own learning journey the last year or so. And again, this aligns really well with that self-work. A lot of the prompts center around connecting with your colleagues. And this is definitely an area that I can grow in. We've actually recently undergone an office renovation at Region 10. And so we're in a new setup in a large open office setting. And so seeing and interacting with my colleagues looks different than it has in the past. And my go-to tendency is to come in, pop in my headphones, and do my thing. And so the timing of thinking about these prompts and their focus on supporting and showing up for colleagues is pretty relevant to me right now, especially in the newly designed workspace that I'm in. And then finally, of course, think about that third S of curation, sharing. So I'm looking to create opportunities to utilize some of these prompts and think pieces in webinars, sessions, and meetings that I'm designing, especially thinking about closing out the year and reflecting to celebrate and then calibrate for next year.
Ooh, those are great now what's, and I cannot wait to hear how those are going for you, Laura. And I will be looking at your desk, popping
Okay,
by
okay.
to see where your book is.
Absolutely. Keep me honest.
Okay. We'd also like to extend the invitation to you, dear listener, to share your ongoing story of learning as well. Take a moment to pause and think wherever you're listening from and consider what ideas have you heard today that have sparked your interest and inspired further learning about teaching happier?
You may also find us on Twitter at Dig Learn Radio to continue the conversation and share your own learning that's inspiring you this week.
This season, we're dedicated to sharing our learning and the things that are inspiring us. We hope that when we share, the conversation and ideas will cultivate curiosity and inspire you to explore one of the resources, reflect on a question we've asked, or continue the conversation with us online. Reflect to consider the what, so what, and now what of your thinking. Share your learning inspirations and ideas from this episode and beyond. And remember to look for our reflection form linked in the show notes and on our website to earn credit for your thoughtful reflections.
We are, as ever, inspired to learn from Gail Allen and her work in the New Pillars of Modern Teaching. She reminds us that when we share, we add a sentence to the story we communicate about ourselves to the world. Let's continue learning, sharing, and transforming. Let's get inspired.